Okay, our next speaker for, our final speaker for the day is Keith Packard. He's going to be talking about monitor hot swapping in X, or as he likes to call it, hot pluggy sweetness. Sounds good to me. But Keith, thank you.
Thank you. I'm sure they picked me because I know that I have a reasonably good reputation of running on time. So my job here today is to get us all out to the pub at 5:30. Anybody have a problem with that? Okay, I'm going to talk about some work that I've done over the last year or so while at Intel in finally fixing the problem, what do you do when you wander into a conference hall and plug your monitor, your laptop into a new projector and pray that it works. Well, over the last couple of months, we've finally gotten to working to the point where it always works now for me, which is kind of a delightful change. And unlike last year when I was running my own X server, now I'm running a regular Zorg X server and I'm running regular drivers. And so very shortly, we'll just work for you as well. Dave Airlie has been working busily at getting this working in the Nouveau and Radeon drivers. So things are looking up. Okay, so X has been ripe for this change for a long time. We had an extension called Zinorama that supported multiple monitors, multiple non-overlapping or overlapping monitors. It was kind of a kludgy implementation, but it did what people wanted. It gave them the ability to migrate applications between screens. It gave them the ability to have multiple screens on their desktop and use them in a useful way. We've had the ability to change and list the video modes available for a particular monitor. So we could find out what modes a monitor could be set in a monitor and switch between them with the X386 vid mode extension. We also had the ability to change the size of the screen with the old version of the Render extension, Render Classic or Render version 1.1. Okay. I updated this slide a little while ago. I don't remember what desired capabilities are. So we have a list of desired capabilities when we want to change here. We want to be able to use multiple monitors. We want to be able to change what modes each monitor is using. And we want to be able to change the size of the screen so that we can adapt to different size projectors. We can come home and plug in stuff as you to take advantage of additional real estate. So one of the problems was for the original Render, the Core X has support for multiple screens. However, the number of screens is fixed in the protocol at startup time. So when you connect to the X server, it tells you what screens are available. You really can't add more. I looked into changing this for a long time. I said, well, can we make it possible for the library to adapt to a variable number of screens? What is it going to take? And In terms of the cost, it was going to be a pretty tremendous cost because the X library allocates all these data structures statically and then returns pointers to them to the application. So your application is expected to retain pointers into a statically allocated data structure. And applications aren't known for their ability to think ahead and throw away the pointers and re-get them on a regular basis. So the ability to change existing applications to support a variable number of screens was really going to be problematic. Worse than that, though, was that because the screens were separate resources, the windows, when you created a window, you couldn't move it between screens. When you created a PixMap or other image, you couldn't move it between screens. So it was some tremendous resource issues as well. The size of each screen was fixed at startup, which made sense in 1986 when you had the monitor connected to the monitor connector on the machine. The old Unix workstations we worked on really only supported one monitor. And it wasn't, they didn't have multi-sync monitors, they didn't have any detection or anything, it had the mode. So adding screens was really hard. I didn't really want to torture myself too much. And I really liked how Zinorama worked in a lot of ways. Zinorama had a lot of the right flavor. It gave you the capabilities that you wanted, the ability to move applications around. It provided a built-in geometric relationship between the monitors because of the way Zinorama worked. It would create one large virtual space and then put the monitors at different offsets within that space. So it made a lot of sense geometrically. And if you've ever seen the Macintosh multi-screen configuration tool, that's pretty much how Zinorama worked. You put the monitors in some relationship to one another, and the server managed the resources across them. Applications could then move across the screen. The way that it worked in the implementation was a little horrific. It actually duplicated all of the resources that an application created across all of the physical monitors. So if you created a window, inside the implementation, it would create a window on one monitor and one on the other monitor. It would be often way off of one of the monitors in terms of wouldn't be visible on that monitor, but all the resources would still be there. If you created images, so if you loaded up your Netscape browser and were browsing an image database or something, every image in that window would be created for every monitor that you had. So if you had a dozen monitors and you had 1,000 images, you'd have 12,000 images in your X server, which starts to consume some significant resources. The Zinnerama implementation that we had wasn't dynamic in any way. The configuration you got at startup and you couldn't change it, which worked pretty well for desktop environments where you weren't planning on changing stuff very much. But in a mobile environment, we like to change things all the time. We like to move stuff around. I like to be able to plug in the screen and unplug it. We also had a couple of extensions for changing modes. The most popular one was the X36 Vid mode extension. If any of you ever pushed, what was it, Alt Shift KP plus and minus accidentally? Yeah, it's like, whoa, what happened? My mode switched on my monitor. That was actually code built into the X server. It didn't change the screen size, it just changed the mode. So you could run games at a lower resolution so they would run faster. You could run change the resolution up and see larger images and that kind of thing. It was a useful extension. This extension also exposed the ability to whack the LUT tables inside the X server so you could change the gamma correction. Instead of having a linear gamma curve, you could have an exponential gamma curve or an inverse exponential gamma curve if you wanted. That meant that you could actually adjust the brightness and contrast of the monitor on the fly from software, which is pretty useful. Again, the screen size for this extension was fixed at startup. You couldn't change the size of the screen. You could change the size of the viewport that the monitor had under the screen, which is kind of a different notion. Most people, when presented with this, were confused because the way that you changed where the viewport on the screen was is you bumped the mouse up against the edge of the screen. So you'd move the mouse to the edge of the monitor and bump it, and the monitor would slide over a little ways. Often what would happen is you'd have a large virtual screen and this tiny little monitor porthole, and some application would pop up a dialog box that was system-wide modal, and you wouldn't be able to see the dialog box, and you'd wonder why your mouse didn't work anywhere and your keyboard wasn't working anymore. Not a great solution. The position of the monitor within the viewport was not visible to applications. So applications couldn't even fix this problem. Because the configuration was all fixed at startup time, the list of modes available for a particular monitor wasn't changeable. You couldn't reprobe the monitor and get a new list of modes. The list of modes was fixed when the server started up. So everything was, you could change things, but you could only change things in a very limited sort of fashion, and you couldn't change the screen size. When I was at HP's lab, we built a little device called the ITSI, and then eventually took that code and put it on the compact iPad. And it had a portrait mode screen. Well, it looked like it was portrait mode. It was actually a landscape mode screen that was turned 90 degrees and stuck into the package. So all of a sudden, the X server had to be able to paint stuff rotated. Well, the easiest way to paint stuff rotated is to paint the whole screen in the normal orientation and then copy it to the rotated, in a rotated variant to the to the frame buffer. Well, if you're going to copy it in one rotation, why don't you allow it to be copied in any rotation and allow it to change on the fly? I also wanted to be able to change the size of the screen. I wanted to be able to change the modes in single screen environments. So we came up with a simplistic extension. It did what we needed. And I think it was probably the right solution at the time. We knew what we wanted. We wanted to be able to change the rotation of the screen. And because the monitor wasn't square, that changing the rotation of the screen also implied that we would be changing the size of the screen. And once you decide to change the size of the screen, you might as well expose size changing in a more general fashion to applications that want to be able to change the mode on a fixed size or a single screen environment. So we added some simple mode changing and some simple rotation stuff. The set of sizes and modes that were available was, again, fixed at monitor X server startup time. So very much like the VidMode extension, things were fixed. The difference between this extension and the VidMode extension is the VidMode extension didn't let you change the size of the screen, and this one would. The limitation of this was that the mode is expressed as just the size in pixels and a refresh rate. And the refresh rate was purely informative. There wasn't any normative information there. So it was missing a lot of data that the VidMode extension had. The VidMode extension gave you the whole mode, all the blanking intervals, the sync polarity, all kinds of stuff. Rando 1.0 was done for the K-Drive server, for the IPAC X server, and for the X server that I used to run on my Mach 64 box and a couple of other machines like that. The target really was, the reason HT was paying me for it, was to get rotation working on the embedded devices so we could rotate the stuff around. Useful. when I was done with the K-Drive stuff, I said, well, I'd really like to get this in X386. But the X386 developer said, well, don't change the driver API, and that would be okay. And I said, well, there's not a lot I can do without changing the API. So I did what we could, and I added the ability to change among the listed modes, but I couldn't add rotation. So without changing the API or ABI of the X386 drivers, I was able to add mode changing among the predefined modes with the Rando 1.0. So now we have the ability to do screen size changing and mode setting through Rander, the ability to do mode setting with actual mode lines through X386 vid mode, the ability to do multi-screen support with Zinorama, and you can see this kludge tower of extensions. So what did we want to do? Well, obviously, we wanted to clean up the mess, and the other thing we wanted to do was fully express the capabilities of modern hardware. None of these other extensions could do what the hardware could actually offer. So they, all of the various drivers are starting to add kludge upon kludge in their configuration file to expose the capabilities of their hardware in a static fashion, so at least people that knew what they wanted to do could get the outputs aligned the way they wanted them to be. Unfortunately, you couldn't change them on the fly. All of the configuration file stuff that people had put into their drivers, the Radeon driver, the NVIDIA driver, the Intel driver, everybody picked a new set of names and variables to assign. So you'd sit there trying to figure out, okay, I need to configure my X server for dual head. How do I do that? Well, on the Intel driver, there was this one set of output options flags. On the Radeon driver, it was the second CRT mode. And on the NVIDIA driver, it was this other crazy stuff that kind of hacked up Rander. Bad, right? If you've ever written a configuration tool, having it be different for every driver is probably not what you're interested in doing. If you've ever written documentation, having to have device-specific documentation to set up common configuration options is not ideal. So obviously, we wanted to unify that. The other thing I wanted to do was reduce the amount of driver-specific code. There's a huge amount of code in every driver. And in fact, in the middle of the implementation of Rander 1.2, somebody dumped an entire implementation of Zinorama into the middle of my driver. Clunk! Like, there's one over here. Oh, the Radeon driver has one. Oh, the NVIDIA driver has one. Oh, you know, the DIX level code has one. So there's like five implementations of Zinorama in the server. This does not make any sense. Oh, I also wanted to make sure that the semantics between extensions were finally unified. The Zinorama extension had a notion of monitor number, so you could number the monitors. You'd have 0, 1, and 2 across your desktop. So you could actually talk about the monitors and where they were in the virtual screen space that way. The X386 VidMode extension had a notion of different monitors. They didn't necessarily align with the Zinorama monitors. Rander had no notion of monitors at all. So when you changed the screen size with Rander, you had no idea what was going to happen. What a disaster. And of course, we're trying to head towards world domination, which is proceeding according to schedule. Okay, so I started out with one implementation, and I don't think I'm going to go into that one. I'm going to describe what we ended up with. I liked the notion of Zinorama because it looked like it was going to be able to cover the semantics of the video cards that I was interested in relatively easily. So what I was going to do is I was going to say one screen. There's only going to be one screen, and all of your monitors now appear in that same geometry space. How we implement that inside the server, well, I wave my hands. Right now, it doesn't cover all the cases that I want, but it covers the cases that are interesting to me today. The second piece of hardware that your laptop or desktop chip has in it is a CRTC controller, a device, a piece of silicon that can actually pull bytes out of the frame buffer, convert them to an appropriate format with the appropriate timings, and send them on. And then the other thing that your box has is a collection of outputs. This laptop has three outputs. It has the LVDS panel built into the laptop. It has this VGA connector over here. And it also has, in the hardware, TV output. Now, they didn't bother to wire the TV output so that I could touch it. But I know that it's there because my driver tells me about it. Lovely. Thanks. We, instead of hiding these abstractions from the application level and trying to come up with some simplistic definition of a simplistic model for how these work, no, we just expose them in the protocol and say, this is not our problem anymore. You figure out what these do. Here's a pretty picture of how all this works. Okay, maybe not so pretty. So here you have the screen geometry. It's just an arbitrary abstract 2D plane that you can play with. And then into that geometry, you place CRTCs, or rectangular regions of the screen, and they're going to scan out the contents of those pixels and send them off. And you can wire up a CRTC to one or more outputs. So if you have a CRTC, this particular example has two CRTCs connected to two different outputs, and the TV output, as usual, disabled because nobody watches TV anymore. The CRTCs can be connected to more than one output if your hardware supports that, and most hardware actually does. But that, of course, means that those two outputs will be running with the same video timings, displaying exactly the same pixels. So there are a lot of limitations, and the extension tries to cover that. So what else did we want to do with this extension? We wanted to be able to add and remove monitors dynamically. We wanted to be able to extend the desktop across the new monitor. We wanted to basically expose everything that the hardware could do out to the application and say, okay, here's what the hardware can do. You figure out what you want. And I wanted to take all these good ideas, three old extensions, and merge them all together and make sure that I could have a single extension that would talk about the semantic notions from these other three models. That means I can talk about the objects in a unified fashion. I don't have to worry that the Zinorama screen numbers don't match the x86 vid mode extension screen numbers, but I don't know what modes are being set at different outputs. What a mess. And of course, Rander 1.0 didn't have any notion of multiple monitors at all. So we're trying to do that. So here's the demonstration. I actually already demonstrated it to myself because I knew that it would work. I wanted to show you what it does. Hello? There we go. Okay, I'm going to make this text a little bigger. I'm sorry I didn't do this earlier. Apologize. What is it doing? Zoom in. Bigger. Bigger is better. Anybody see that now? Okay, so I wanted to show you what my machine looks like right now. So right now, my machine has three video outputs, as I told you. This application doesn't actually show the CRTC information. It does if I do it for both. Oh, that's way too much information. Okay, we'll look at that in a second. So it has three outputs. The VGA output is running 1024 by 768. It's located at 0 by 0 in the logical screen space. The logical screen is 10 by 7. And because of some other things that I'll talk about in a while, the maximum possible logical size of the screen in this hardware is 2K by 2K. So I can't make the screen bigger than 2K by 2K. But I can place these monitors anywhere within this geometry that I want. Right now, the inside of my laptop and the outside screen match exactly. They're exactly the same. But if I want, I can say, I can actually put the LVDS output below the external output. So now this is below, and I can do this. I can actually drag the monitor so that it's half on one and half on the other. So I can do that dynamically. That's the interesting part here. We used to be able to do that. Now I can do it on the fly. Oh, I'm going to drag it up again so you can see what I'm doing. Hello, Christmas. I do behind my back typing. Whoa. Cannot type. Ooh, there's a new file now. No, I have to actually tell it where to put it. There we go. Now I can see what I'm typing again. Didn't look like it changed to you at all. It's a dramatic change for me, fortunately. Okay. So I can move monitors around. The monitors actually can tell me what modes are available. That's what I wanted to show you here, was the modes, the available modes. So you can actually see here that the DGA output has three available modes, 1024 by 768, 8x6, and 6x4. The reason that there is only three modes is because this wire has no DDC information. If this wire actually provided DDC information, there'd be a huge pile of modes of everything that external monitor could support. But as is typical in a presentation environment, they just clip that wire off because you didn't need that one. The internal panel, on the other hand, has a huge number of available modes. Because it has a built-in scaler, I can support almost any mode available, which is kind of useful. And the TV output, poor TV output, it's always disconnected. Now, you know, these actually tell you that they are connected. How do we do that? I can actually tell if something's plugged in. No, I'm not looking for DDC information. I actually do a load detection. The chip has a built-in current measurement device that measures current going out the wire. So I can actually tell dynamically when you have something plugged in. You unplug it, I know something's been unplugged. And in fact, the hardware will send me an interrupt when something's been plugged in or unplugged. I don't turn that on because to have it turned on while something is unplugged means that I suck power for the about a watt of power driving the output trying to detect the load. So I decided not to do that. A watt is a lot when your laptop draws only 5. Okay. But the modes that are listed here are a very brief form of the mode line. They're just showing the size and refresh rate. We actually do have the whole mode line, you know, with all the sync timings and sync polarities and everything, the clock rates and everything. So, and you can actually see which CRTC things are connected to. The outputs have names. The CRTCs don't have names. You can't touch them, so I didn't think they needed a name. I would give them lovely numbers. Okay, let's get back to the presentation. Does anybody have any particular questions about that demonstration? Yeah. If you have a window on the lower screen and then you destroy that screen, what happens? Well, fortunately, your window manager is really clever because when you destroy that, when you remove that monitor, your screen management program is going to resize the screen to be smaller than it was before. Your window manager is going to say, whoa, the screen is smaller now, but there's an application off the screen. The window manager will automatically move that window back up onto the screen for you so you can't lose anything. That's one of the advantages of resizing the screen, is that the window manager knows about this kind of activity. Another thing that's really cool is the window manager, Metaxy, I haven't tried KWin, although I'm pretty sure it will do the same thing. The window manager actually reacquires the data about where the monitors are laid out so that when you move monitors around and hit maximize, it maximizes to the current monitor. This all just worked. This was really cool. It's like, wait a minute, I don't have to add code because somebody else was being clever. That's the best part. So there's all kinds of, yeah. He asked the question of whether the mouse actually stops. It's supposed to. Right now, the mouse can travel over the entire bounds of the logical screen size. It's supposed to be clipped to the monitors, but I haven't got that code plugged together yet. Oops. That'll happen soon, I hope. It's not too difficult. You have to have some policy about where the mouse goes because you can't ask applications when you're moving the mouse what to do when the mouse goes off the screen. So I'll have to have some relatively sane built-in policy. I had something clued together. It really wasn't working right. So my hands are waving. Can you tell I have no idea what I'm doing? Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, so what Ted's asking is, if you have monitors of different sizes, like I do at home, I have a 16 by 12 external LCD and my internal 10 by 7 screen, so there's a little bit of dead space. Fortunately, Zinarama has already taken care of this case. Has anybody turned the volume down? Does this actually work? Yeah, okay. So Zinarama already handles this case. Zinarama tells, the information in Zinarama tells applications where the monitors are in the virtual screen space. And the window manager knows about the Zinnerama information. So the window manager will constrain the windows to the actual visible real estate, which is, I mean, that was the cool part about Zinnerama. It solved all of these problems, and it's been working for a long time. So the support is already in the application. Okay, other things that we put in this extension. We can play with the LUTs now. I did all that. We also added, because we knew we would not put everything in that we needed, we added some arbitrary properties. So you can add property, you can set properties in the outputs, you can get properties from the outputs. One of the things the outputs tell you about is their EDID data. So you ask the output, what's your EDID data? And you can actually get the binary data that was fetched from the monitor. So if you want to be able to find out what monitor manufacturer is connected to your server, I provide that information. I also want to be able to do things like backlight brightness through this, so you can change the backlight brightness control with your LVDS panel. I need to use this instead of some screen-based mechanism because you could have two LVDS panels or whatever, or you might not have an LVDS at all, so I want to use this mechanism. You can also add new user-defined modes. I have a full mode line. I know exactly what to do with that in the output. You can send a new mode line to the server and set it. Let's see. We talked about this quite a bit. This time around, I wanted to target what x386 was running on. The goal was not embedded hardware. The Rander extension supports embedded hardware quite well. I really wanted to make it work on the desktop and on laptops and tablets and that kind of stuff. And I wanted to make sure that the implementation that we provided was easy for people to add into their drivers. It's not as easy as I wanted it to be, but I think it's reasonably simple. One of the goals is to actually be able to remove code from drivers and put it into the device independent code so we can reduce the amount of overall code and make things more common. What happens with old drivers, if you plug in an old driver to a new server, everything works like Rander 1.0. You get a fixed number of sizes, and the screen size tracks the monitor size. This, of course, is a little funky because in Rander 1.2, you set the screen size and the monitor size independently. But if you have an old driver, what's going to happen is when you set the screen size, it's going to ignore you. And then when you set a mode, the screen size is going to get forced to the size that you requested. It's not ideal, but it does work reasonably well. What happens with old servers and a new driver? One of the goals here is to make it so that I can take my driver and backport it. So the code that I'm writing actually has backward compatibility stuff for old servers in it. So you can actually compile a new driver, you can link in this new device independent code directly into your driver, and then it will run against an old server. And it knows that the old server doesn't have a bunch of cool functionality. But at least you get sensible multi-monitor support from the configuration file, and the Rander stuff doesn't do completely insane things. So you can do a lot of the stuff that you can do, you just don't get the dynamic configuration availability. Nearly done. So what problems have we encountered in this? We're actually almost done with this work. So I wanted to tell you that it was, instead of just telling you what we were doing, I wanted to tell you what we've done and some of the problems that we've encountered. Normally, when I come to LCA, I'm telling you about something I'm about to do. But this time, we're actually done, which is kind of cool. One of the biggest problems that we've encountered with this new work is the existing driver architecture, XAA, is so broken that we are basically going to have to throw it away to get all the functionality that we want. XAA actually treats your entire video card in one single global coordinate space. So off-screen objects are not really off-screen, they're just not visible on the screen. They're all part of this giant screen pix map. This means that this is bad in a couple of ways. Most cards, R200, Intel 915, 945, MGA cards, they have limited rendering addressing space. The Intel 915 chip in this laptop can only address the 2K by 2K rectangle. It can't do anything bigger than that. So all of XAA, all of your off-screen pix snaps, all of your textures, everything like that, has to live in this 2K by 2K space. But when I'm at home and I have a 16 by 12 external monitor and a 10 by 7 internal monitor, I've got a 1968 by 1200 monitor now, screen, not leaving a lot of space for my off-screen data. The DRI architecture right now has this totally separate memory manager from X. So when you're playing with DRI, you have to pick how much memory DRI is going to get and how much memory X is going to get. And DRI doesn't have any persistent objects in it. So that when you are trying to allocate a bunch of memory for X, you can't easily use DRI as a memory allocator. You have to use the magic X one. Well, so how is Rander going? Rander is actually almost done. The protocol is done. The implementation is finished. The Intel driver is working quite nicely. Most of the stuff that we're doing now is actually pulling this new device-independent infrastructure that we built inside the driver, making sure that it's truly device-independent by pulling it out and putting it in some separate files. The Radeon driver, Dave's been using it all week. It's remarkably functional, considering that he's using code that I wrote specifically for the Intel chip, and he's kind of done a bunch of Zed magic on it to make it work. One of the interns that I have at Intel tried to send me a GTK user interface demo, but the Intel firewall ate it. But she promises that she has a lovely demo that she can show me as soon as I get back to Intel, but I haven't seen the code yet. It should be pretty fun. What are we going to do in the future? We need to fix the remaining drivers. Obviously, a new Nouveau driver will probably be done pretty soon. So we need to do the Trident driver, the Sys driver, the VIA drivers, and the Scattered drivers. And I need to finish the rotation work. The rotation stuff is now device independent, actually. All of the rotation support is done up in the device independent layer. So we should have rotation support on all of our drivers. And that's my talk today. I have about 8 minutes for questions, and then it'll be time for beer. Okay? Does hardware have support for rotation, accelerating the rotation? Well, of course it does. It's 3D hardware. All 3D hardware can do rotated bits very efficiently. And so the implementation that the hardware independent implementation that I'm using is actually calling the render extension, which can be accelerated to do the rotation in hardware. There are a couple of pieces of hardware that can do rotation in the scan-out stage, which is to say they can actually say, okay, don't display this direction, really display it this direction. Now, those are relatively rare, and of course you can use those as well. I'm just saying that I have a software implementation which can take advantage of the normal way of doing hardware with rotated blitz that doesn't take any new code in your driver. Yeah, accelerator is obviously important. Yeah. Oh, sure.
You mentioned your laptop didn't have TV out, like mine does. Is there any chance the TV out works these days?
Oh, yeah, TV out works great on Intel chips. It's fully supported. We have NTSC and PAL working. We're having some trouble with the HD mode. There's magic filtering in the chip. We just got a big pile of numbers to do that as well. So all TV out with Intel chips works right now.
Including 945?
Oh, yeah, of course. Note that only the mobile chips have TV out, but those all work now.
Cool.
If you have an HD 6320 laptop that has S video out, that works. Do you have a question?
What Radeon chipsets are supported?
Dave has been working on the R200 and R300 Radeon chipsets, so I'm relatively sure those are the ones that are supported. The later, newer ones have no support in open source at all, so of course there's no Rander 1.2 support for those. Other questions?
I feel like I should already know the answer to this one, but is it entirely within one graphics card, or can you put, say, a machine with two separate graphics cards?
Oh, that's a really good question. I didn't talk about multiple graphics cards at all. The major reason for that is that it's not a particular focus of mine right now, and that's really the huge limitation of what we have with the code that we have right now. The old Zinorama implementation would do this magic multiple resource instantiation, so you get pixmap for every video card, so that you could actually do Zinorama across video cards. We're not doing that anymore with this implementation. We're using the fact that the single video driver can use a large frame buffer and take pieces out for different monitors. So we're doing a totally different implementation of how Zinorama works. And we're not duplicating any resources. We're exposing a single screen up to the upper levels of the X server, and then down inside that, we're pulling out multiple outputs out of that single screen. We're going to have to figure out how to make plastic Zinorama code and the new Rander code work together so we can have our efficient Zinarama within a card talking to a multiplexing Zinarama across multiple cards.
Any tips for all the ones who can't get VGA output working? For instance, in my case, the screen is just a bit...
What kind of video chip do you have?
In this particular case, it's a Radeon.
Yeah, well, one of the advantages is one of the problems that we have with the Radeon right now is all of the DDC stuff is basically ignored at X-Server startup. Rander 1.2, the structure there, actually uses the DDC information to select appropriate modes, and to have you can automatically determine which mode you should use on the VGA output. So with the Rander 1.2 code, your VGA will start working a lot better because it will start using the DDC information, read the EDID table out of the monitor, and automatically pick an appropriate mode for the monitor, which it doesn't do today.
So can I go home and use this today?
Yes, of course. All the servers in it, the public repositories. The X server branch that we're using here is the Rander 1.2 for server 1.2 branch. The Intel driver branch is the mode setting branch. Dave? Oh, Dave is off at the end of the talk, I hope. What branch are you using for Radeon? Oh, so the Radeon driver, it's the Rander 1.2 branch as well. Oh, it's not, you haven't pushed it yet? You're mean. Yeah, okay. Yeah. So we have all the code. The Rander protocol and Rander library are the master branches now. They've been released. I'm going to release the Rander application as well, because it's in actually pretty good shape now. So, of course, the code's public. You wound me. Yeah.
What can we do about devices that lie about the EDID data? Especially when we're looking at high-definition profiles.
Excellent question.
I've got that many panels out there that will only say they support 60 hertz video, yep, when we only carry 50.
Yeah. A very good question. So a lot of monitors, in fact, I got three monitors from France last week that lied about EDID data. My plan right now is to put a table of quirks into the server and recover from those automatically. And if your monitor is not covered by a quirk, the configuration data that you can put into the config file, you can override the EDID data and say, no, don't use what it said, use what I want instead. So you can get the EDID data. When it works really nicely. When it doesn't work, it fails catastrophically, and you can recover. Ideally, you would send us what you had done in terms of selecting a preferred mode or changing the mode line that the monitor is using, and we can add a quirk to the X service so that everybody using that monitor gets the fix automatically without having to edit their own config file. That's the goal.
Is there any chance that we can get remote X servers as additional monitors plugged in, like in a hot pluggy way?
Oh, like XDMX?
Yeah, right.
XDMX already does this to a great extent. I haven't really thought about adding the ability to add a remote X server into an existing X environment so you could add a remote screen to your existing environment. That's certainly possible. It seems a lot more like the classic Zinarama stuff, though, where you have multiple different backends with different resources. The other option is to use something like VNC, where you're actually painting into a large frame buffer, then using VNC to pull bits out of a portion of it and sending those over to a remote screen. So you'd need to hack up the VNC protocol to only pull a portion of the monitor out, a portion of the screen information out. That's also possible. Questions up there?
You mentioned briefly the new memory manager,
yep,
that's going into X. Could you elaborate a little more on that and what those capabilities are going to be for unified memory architecture?
Right. Well, a couple of things have happened. DRI at this point has a much more sophisticated memory manager for UMA video environments like the Intel 915, where you can actually take arbitrary pieces of physical address space of your machine and map them into the video card dynamically. It is an MMU trick, but it's not a CPU MMU trick. The graphics adapter has a separate MMU. So you can actually map things dynamically in and out of the graphics adapter's address space, which means you can have persistent objects. When you as a DRI application are running on the card, you can map your own objects into the address space of the card. When you release the lock, you can unmap your stuff and somebody else's stuff can get mapped in. that gives us finally the ability to have persistent objects. In terms of a new memory manager for the X server, because we can have persistent objects now, I can throw away the split between DRI and X and have the X server use the same mechanism for the video card. So now the X server and all the DRI applications can all have access to the full address space of the video card, and the applications and all the X server and all the DRI applications can use as much memory as they need and dynamically map that into the video card's address aperture.
Does this mean that we can get rid of the sort of memory just being disappeared by in the BIOS sort of thing, the sort of frame buffer bit?
Well, that is actually memory. That's actually just address space. We map in memory into that address space.
Right.
So the memory, you aren't actually sucking that memory out until you tell the X server to map memory into that aperture. So fortunately, what you should do in your BIOS is set it as high as you can, and then you can select the video RAM configuration in your X server to choose a reasonable number. But yeah, that's the goal, is to make it so that you're using as much memory as you need and you aren't wasting memory sucking it into the video aperture statically.
Yeah.
Yep. I think we're done here today. Thanks for coming, guys. Let's have some beer tonight.
Sounds like a very good